This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiswu Hib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
In a scathing report to the UN Human Rights Council, a senior UN official accuses the Democratic Republic of Congo of turning a blind eye to systematic and gross violations of human rights committed by its security forces.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Details coming up.
Also, thousands of trade union members in South Africa went on a one-day strike, accusing President Zuma of corruption.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, five people were killed yesterday in northeastern Nigeria after a suicide bomber blew herself up in a mosque. Three others were injured. AFP reports the attack took place in the town of Dikwa, about 90 kilometers from the Borno state capital of Maiduguri. Authorities say the attack came during morning prayers. A second female bomber was intercepted by soldiers. She detonated her explosives but killed only herself.
Human Rights Watch is accusing Cameroon's military of forcibly repatriating 100,000 Nigerian refugees since early 2015. A new report says many refugees have been subjected to assault, torture, and sexual abuse and remain at risk even after returning to Nigeria. Hundreds of thousands have fled northeast Nigeria to escape attacks by Boko Haram militants. Cameroonian authorities have not responded to the report, but have denied abusing or forcing any Nigerian asylum seeker to return home. Jerry Simpson is Associate Director of Human Rights Watch's Refugee Rights Program from Abuja. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kapua about the allegations against Cameroon's military.
The military in Cameroon traps Nigerians as they flee the carnage in northeast Nigeria, where the military is playing Boko Haram. They trap them as they reach the Cameroonian border, screen them aggressively inside Cameroon, often torturing them, accusing them of being Boko Haram members and trying to get them to confess, accusing women of being Boko Haram wives. They then trap them in border areas where they deny them access to the UN Refugee Agency's protection. They keep them in these remote areas where assistance is minimal or non-existent, leading to infant and child death. And then arbitrarily, they choose at a time when hundreds of people beat them up, force them onto trucks, and then dump them back across the border in Nigeria.
What's been the response of Cameroonian authorities to your allegations?
The Cameroonian authorities are burying their head in the sand on this one. The UN Refugee Agency finally broke 2 years of silence on these mass deportations and abuses in early 2017, so the abuses are undeniable. However, Cameroon says none of this is happening. No one is being assaulted. They have refused to respond to our requests for comment on our research findings, and they also didn't invite us to Cameroon to release the report there, which was a prerequisite to obtaining a visa. And so we were forced to release the report in Nigeria instead. We do hope that the UN will continue to engage with the Cameroonian authorities at the highest levels to try and stem these deportations.
What happens when these refugees or asylum seekers return to northeast Nigeria?
In the worst case scenario, they're killed. Less than 4 weeks ago, for example, almost 20 of the returnees died in an attack by the Islamist group Boko Haram against a militarized displacement camp in northeast Nigeria. Many of the returnees end up in these confined militarized camps where basically the Nigerian military pens them up like animals to prevent them from going into areas where Boko Haram is active. There they suffer sexual abuse and exploitation in these camps. They don't receive sufficient aid because aid agencies can't reach them. And others end up in remote Nigerian border areas in impoverished communities.
Now, you're also raising concern about some of the refugee children. What have you found?
We have found that some of the kids in these remote Cameroonian border areas have ended up so weak as a result of lack of food, water, healthcare, that they have then died as Cameroon forcibly deports them with their parents. And other kids are separated from their parents during these violent deportations. So Cameroon appears to be trying to send a message to Nigerians that it does not want to tolerate their presence any longer because of the presence of the Nigerian group Boko Haram.
Now, Human Rights Watch says Nigeria is complicit in the unlawful forced return of its own citizens. Has the Nigerian government responded to your allegations?
We actually had a representative from the Nigerian authorities present at our press conference this morning in Abuja, at which that point was raised, and they did not deny that they had sent military trucks across the border to Cameroon at the end of June and helped Cameroon deport 900 Nigerian asylum seekers. They say that those 900, as well as many others, were suffering, that they needed some kind of assistance, and that Nigeria wanted to help them. Our position has been, if Nigeria feels that the only option to help these abused citizens in Cameroon is to help Cameroon deport them back to Nigeria, then Nigeria should say so publicly. It should say, we have no option but to help these people back into our war zone, but we're not doing it happily.
Jerry Simpson is Associate Director of Human Rights Watch Refugees Rights Program from Abuja. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kapua.
In a scathing report to the UN Human Rights Council, a senior UN official accuses the Democratic Republic of Congo of turning a blind eye to systematic and gross violations of human rights by its security forces. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The report describes a justice system that shows no independence and allows impunity to flourish, leading to further violence against the people of Democratic Republic of Congo. In her presentation to the Council, UN Deputy High Commissioner for Human Rights, Kate Gilmore, criticized the government of President Joseph Kabila for failing to live up to an agreement to pave the way for presidential elections this year and a peaceful transfer of power. Instead of showing greater respect for human rights and freedom of expression, she says the government has become more repressive.
What followed was a general ban on the activities of the opposition and on the activities of civil society. What followed was continued targeting of political opponents, of human rights defenders, and of journalists. Relentless targeting.
Gilmore says insecurity has increased across the country. She says violence has erupted in North and South Kivu and Tanganyika and in the southern provinces of the Kasai region on a scale not seen for many years.
As a consequence of the country's conflicts, there are scattered across the Democratic Republic of Congo a staggering 3.8 million internally displaced persons, the highest number in all of Africa.
Earlier this year, the UN's call for an international investigation into widespread human rights violations, including 42 mass graves in the Kasai region, was rejected by the DRC. In what appears to be a turnabout, the DRC's Minister of Human Rights, Marie-Ange Mushobekwa, told the Council her government would welcome investigations in the Kasai region by the international team of experts appointed by the Council. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In South Africa, thousands of trade union members took to the streets today in a nationwide strike calling on President Jacob Zuma to resign. COSATU, the Congress of South African Trade Unions, called the one-day strike, accusing Zuma of corruption, misusing millions of dollars in public funds, and collusion. Many members of the South African Communist Party joined in the strike. Zuma denies the allegations that have plagued him and his administration for years. Reporter Delia Robertson is following developments from Johannesburg. She explained the reason for today's walkout.
They call the strike against what we in South Africa refer to as state capture. That is the subversion of state-owned entities and state monies that have gone to benefit the president and his family and some of his associates, and in particular one family, the Gupta family, who have become incredibly wealthy since their arrival in South Africa just a couple of decades ago. And so that is one of the primary reasons. It's been a building rift between the trade unions and the African National Congress. People who have benefited from this administration, you know, have been fighting tooth and nail to keep the president in place and to ensure that he is succeeded probably by his former wife, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, who many feel will continue to protect him and his associates. In December, the ANC held its national elective conference when all leadership positions come into play, including the president of the organization and the senior officials of the organization. Zuma has been president of the ANC for two terms now, and although the ANC does not in its constitution have a term limit, it's taken a strong position in the past on anybody serving longer than two terms, particularly when Mr. Mbeki wanted to run for a third term in 2007. And so the ANC itself is extremely fractured and factionalized, and there are several people who are vying for the top spot, one of whom is, as I mentioned, his former wife, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. Another is the current deputy of the ANC and also deputy president of the country, Cyril Ramaphosa, and there are a handful of others.
That's Delia Robertson reporting from Johannesburg.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, the African Union says it is questioning why Chad has been included in President Trump's new travel ban. It calls the decision unjust, considering Chad's importance in the fight against terrorism. The AU Commission has released a statement saying it is perplexed because the legal movement of people is the foundation of a stronger and mutually enriching relationship between the African continent and the United States. However, the AU also says it welcomes the removal of the travel ban on Sudan.
The European Union has announced it will take in 50,000 refugees over the next 2 years. The EU has unveiled a new plan as part of efforts to reform the migration system. It will give preferences for asylum to what it calls the most vulnerable migrants from Libya, Egypt, Niger, Sudan, Chad, and Ethiopia. The plan also calls for new efforts to return migrants who don't qualify for asylum. The EU says about 1.5 million people are scheduled to be returned to their home countries. It's urging member states to streamline the process. The EU also says it will work with Libya to improve conditions for stranded migrants, reduce deaths at sea, and help stop migrant flows across Libya's borders.
A recent study finds boys and girls in both developed and developing countries enter their teen years with a surprisingly common set of rigid gender stereotypes. Those stereotypes are linked to a variety of lifelong risks, such as HIV/AIDS, depression, violence, and suicide. The study focuses on girls and boys between the ages of 10 through 14 in 15 countries, including Kenya, Malawi, Nigeria, South Africa, Egypt, the DRC, the United States, China, and India. One of the lead researchers, Kristen Mari, An associate professor at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore says the research was needed to track the serious health risk confronting preteens.
One of the largest gaps that we realized was that we really didn't know a whole lot about this early adolescent phase, the 10 to 14-year-old phase, and especially in low and middle income countries. And the other thing that we knew was that other studies among older adolescents and young adults, we knew that gender inequitable norms led to poor health outcomes. So one of the things we wanted to know is really when do these gender beliefs and attitudes really start to develop?
The Global Early Adolescent Study is a joint effort by the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in Baltimore, Maryland, and the World Health Organization. One big surprise, the study found that consistent forms of patriarchy start early in life. Marr said it didn't matter whether the children were from Baltimore, Maryland, or Blantyre, Malawi. They found the same types of gender beliefs and attitudes among adolescents and their parents.
Basically, what we found is that these gender inequitable norms actually are being solidified much earlier than we thought. And through the result of these findings, that gender is much more of a system that we have to think about. And there's multiple institutions, communities, parents, families, peers that are transmitting these types of messages to adolescents, and they're aware of it. They're very astute observers. They know what's happening.
Maury notes an example of this in girls.
Across the sites, once a girl starts developing breasts in puberty, it's like there's a shift in the environment around her in terms of attitudes and beliefs. So no longer is she this child who has freedom to play with boys and be out. Instead, her body becomes a sexual object. And so her interactions with boys are now restricted because boys then at that stage cannot be trusted. And there is a burden on girls to try to protect themselves more. They're seen as being much more vulnerable. And in many of the sites, parents restricted their girls really to the home.
Boys, on the other hand, are seen as being stronger at puberty and consequently given more freedom and mobility. Maury highlights that sexual and reproductive health risks carry more of a stigma for girls. Family honor is also involved, and it was found that parents in many of the poor and developing countries were more protective of girls. Maury emphasizes these results are based on perceptions and are qualitative only. The next phase will study quantitative data and include how preteens' relationships with family members and others can contribute to future health risks.
But what we do know is there's already been studies published, a number of studies, that we know that these gender inequitable norms lead to poor health outcomes, such as HIV and pregnancy and gender-based violence. But we haven't had a study yet that looked at this age group. And what we're finding is that actually we can start looking at these types of relationships as early as this age group.
Maury notes that previous gender transformative projects have shown that many culturally rigid beliefs, attitudes, and subsequent health risks in older adolescents can be changed. Their findings suggest changes can begin earlier with the preteen age group. However, she said the effort needs an approach that involves the support of the parents, schools, communities, and peers of the preteen. Kim Lewis, VOA News, Washington.
Human rights organizations accuse Tanzania's government of muzzling the media, civil society, and opposition politicians critical of the institution. The critics say cybercrime laws, which took effect 2 years ago, have been used against 9 media organizations, with the Mwana Halisi newspaper the latest to be banned. Rights groups are calling on the government to confirm with the practices and standards of the international community. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
Mwana Halisi is the second newspaper to be banned in Tanzania in 1 year. The government said the paper had violated previous warnings about articles criticizing President John Magufuli. In a statement, the government points to 5 stories it considered offensive and called on the paper to retract some of them. Mwana Halisi news editor Said Kubenea says the paper has done nothing wrong. Mwana Halisi newspaper has never written a story that is insightful. We report facts that are liked by many readers, and we point out where the government is going wrong. That's our policy since the start of this newspaper. This is the second time the newspaper has been banned in less than 5 years. The news outlet was banned in 2012 for publishing stories that allegedly threatened national security. After a three-year court battle, the ban was lifted. Kubenea says they are hopeful they will get a similar ruling. Without a doubt, we will go to court to challenge this decision to ban our newspaper, and we believe the court will listen and give us justice. Earlier this year, another newspaper, Mawio, was banned for 2 years after linking two retired presidents to dubious mining contracts. Rights groups criticized the ban as an attack on freedom of expression, which has been restricted since President Magufuli came to power in 2015. In 2015 and 2016, the government adopted four pieces of legislation that rights groups say have been used to suppress the media and dissenting voices. Similar concerns have been voiced by opposition politician Peter Msigwa, who was arrested this week for allegedly linking police to a gun attack on another opposition member earlier in the month. I spoke about how this government reacts when it is criticized, just like Tundu Lissu used to do it. As Chadema Party, we feel that the international community has interest on this case. I also spoke about the Magufuli administration that shows signs of dictatorship. He doesn't want to be criticized and advised, and they said what I said was insightful. Tundu Lissu is another opposition lawmaker and a government critic. He was shot by a known gunman in Tanzania earlier this month. The legislator has been arrested by police several times and charged with incitement. Henry Maina is head of the East Africa Office of Article 19, a global non-governmental organization that promotes freedom of expression and information worldwide. He says the silencing of the critics is not good for democracy.
We are going to have a situation where the media and civil society and opposition can no longer raise their voices to hold the government to account, because the instruments of power are clearly being used to incarcerate, jail, and inordinately open cases.
In the 2015 election, President Magufuli received 50% of the vote, compared to previous elections in which 80% of Tanzanians voted for the ruling CCM party. The East African nation is considered stable compared to its neighbors. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A new initiative has been launched to track wildlife that had been poisoned by poachers. The Associated Press reports the African Wildlife Poisoning Database is collecting data on poisoning that goes as far back as 1961. More than 300 incidents have been recorded in 15 countries that led to the deaths of 8,000 animals from dozens of species. Conservationists say the practice is on the rise because of easy access to agricultural chemicals and the growing demand for animal parts, such as ivory and rhino horns. Recently, hundreds of vultures were found dead in Namibia after feeding on the carcass of a poisoned elephant. And in the past 18 months, 70 lions have died from poison in southern Africa.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Keith Holmes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria is transmitted by mosquito bites, but there are some things you can do to reduce your risk. Wear light-colored, loose-fitting clothing, including long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. Eliminate any standing water around your home, including water that collects in wood piles, taps, puddles, old buckets, water jugs, and containers that livestock drink from. And if you can get one, use an insecticide-treated bed net to cover you and your children while you sleep.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on VOAAfrica.com.
VOAAfrica.com.
All day, all night.